Welcome to the Teach and Tell podcast. I'm your host, Mike Raymer, Executive Director of the Georgia Council on Economic Education, an organization whose mission is to help teachers teach economics and personal finance. Come along as we spend time with some great teachers to learn more about what it's really like in the classroom. Today's guest is Stacy Doctor. Stacy, tell us a little bit more about yourself and your teaching career.
All right. So I teach eighth grade Georgia Studies right now in Forsyth County at DeSanta Middle School, which is one of the newer middle schools in the county, southern part of it, Forsyth County. I've gotten to the point where I can't keep track anymore of what year it is. It's either 22 or 23. And the majority has been in Georgia. I'm from Michigan originally, went to Michigan State. And let's see, almost all but 1 year has been teaching social studies. I've taught from sixth grade through 12th grade. But middle school is definitely my favorite place to be. And both seventh and eighth grade, ideally I would teach 50-50, but admin wants everyone in one grade, so okay. I picked eighth.
What was the 1 year where you didn't teach social studies? What were you teaching?
I taught sixth grade ELA at a school in Gwinnett County, my first year in Georgia, and it wasn't good. So it was one and done with ELA. So social studies is definitely where my heart is, not teaching grammar. So no, thank you.
Yeah, that's oof. I don't even want to think about that.
No.
All right. So what's been the most rewarding part of your teaching career or the most rewarding part about teaching middle school students?
All right. So I love it, the relationships that I'm able to build with students. One benefit of middle school is the clay is still a little bit wet and okay. malleable. And I feel like as a teacher, I'm able to have more of an impact on students. Whereas when I taught high school, I remember feeling sometimes students, you know, rebel just for the sake of rebelling. They're much more set in their ways. And I just love that, you know, they're still at that age where they're becoming young adults. It's not all about them. They're able to have thoughtful conversations about world issues, but they're also still a kid. And they appreciate, you know, being told, like, well done by their teacher. So being able to build those relationships, being able to stay in touch with students, you know, once they've left, whether they're, you know, I had them as a seventh grader and see them as eighth graders or in high school or even beyond, having students come back to visit. I actually have a student this year who I taught in seventh and eighth grade who's doing some unofficial student teaching with me.
Ooh,
she nice. Said she reached out last year and said she was having a quarter life crisis and
like
had
John
been
Mayer.
Planning on going into, I think, business, but thought maybe she wanted to go into education, but she wanted to have some experience and see before going to college. So, and she has decided that she is going to go into education.
Awesome.
So that's always really rewarding. Just students being able to, you know, tell you that what they learned in your classroom has truly helped to prepare them for high school and, you know, that they have positive memories and that, you know, they appreciate, you know, everything that, you know, I was able to do for them as a teacher. It definitely makes me feel like I'm making a difference, which is why I wanted to become a teacher. So,
okay. So this former student of yours, who's unofficially kind of student teacher,
yes.
Did she call you Stacy or Miss Doctor?
Well, no, she calls me Miss Doctor.
Okay.
So I call her, we have the students call her Miss Aaliyah. She's not quite ready to go by her last name yet.
Oh, yeah.
But she's wonderful. She helps grade papers. She, nice. You know, helps, yes, plan
very
activities.
Nice.
The kids really respond well to her. She's doing a great job.
Every teacher who's listening to this is going, boy, how do I get one of those?
I know.
I need grade papers.
Yes. Teachers here ask me the same thing. So.
Hey, that's nice.
Yes.
Your answer is you just got to be nice to your students when you have them, right?
Yes, apparently so. Nice. And stay in touch with them. That's
key.
One thing that definitely, because then when opportunities come up, you know, I'm someone that they feel comfortable reaching out to. So,
okay. So I want to talk about challenges. My wife is a middle school teacher, and I've been in middle schools, and boy, to me, that's a challenge right there. So, what challenge or challenges do you sort of think about or face daily that sort of slow you down a little bit?
So, I mean, as far as the middle school age, I think if I didn't live it every day, if I were to be new to middle school, absolutely. The kids are, I mean, there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of changes going on, but I'm so used to it that it doesn't, it doesn't really faze me anymore. But I would say that the biggest challenge that I have is just finding enough hours in the day to do everything that I need to and want to do, to the best of my ability. I mean, I can do things, but not like you don't want to do it 50%. You want to do it well, and there's just so much to be done. So I would love to, and I don't know that this is the most realistic solution, but if there was a way to have like an actual assistant or a more like a student teacher who helps with all of just like the stuff that you have to do, whether it be responding to emails, making copies of things. Yesterday we did a sorting activity looking at how Georgia contributed to World War I, but also how the war impacted Georgia, and just cutting up all the little slips of paper, cutting up 12 sets. The biggest one though is evaluating student work and providing feedback in a timely manner. That takes a tremendous amount of time to do well and to get it back to students when it still, is relatively fresh in their minds. And that's the biggest time issue for me is being able to do that well, but then also being able to plan, quality lessons
Yeah, the next
and
day.
yes.
What
So having a helper would be amazing.
Yes. A couple follow-up questions. How many
Sure.
students do you typically teach a semester?
Good question. So I have five classes, 30 being the typical number, that would be 150. That right now I think I have around 140. I will say this year the admin decided to assign classes differently, and for the last 10 or so years I've taught all advanced, which brings more grading because there's a more projects, more essays, just more rigorous assignments that the kids are completing. So this year I have two advanced and then three on level. And I will say the grading has been less intense because there aren't as many of the rigorous projects and longer writing assignments, but it still is
And then
a tremendous amount of time.
my next question is, typical day for you, like when do you get to the building and when do you leave to go home?
Okay, so the school day starts at 9 a.m. Our contract time to be here is 8:30. I am not a morning person, so I typically get here like 8:15, 8:20, and then. But I am an afternoon, evening person, and I live close to my school, so I have a short commute. So I typically stay till like 6, 6:30, even like 7 o'clock is like that. That's late.
So are you like locking up the building when you go?
No, that's the thing. There are usually a handful of other people here. But I have found, and it's just, we all have different quirks. I don't do well grading like intense work until after the school day is done. If I know that I have a set amount of time, like I have 40 minutes, I don't find that I like can't get into the swing of grading. So I do all the other little things and then I'll wait until after school and just knock it out for like 2 hours.
Wow. Oof. Bless you. That's impressive. It's like dark out at 7 o'clock a lot of nights.
Yes,
Wow.
it's getting better now, so that's
Yes.
good.
Okay. How about a favorite teaching memory? Can you think of one memory that you're like, man, this makes it all worth it, this one thing?
So I mean, there are so many with 20 some years. One of my favorite memories actually comes from before I was officially a teacher. So when I went to college, I had no interest in going into education. I wanted to be a politician, and I thought I was going to be a United States Senator. I had lowered my goals from being President of the United States. And I look back and I'm like, what in the world was wrong with me? But my goal was to have an impact on my community, and I felt like the best way to do so was to go into politics. Quickly realized that was not going to happen. Thankfully, my freshman year, when I was still able to change my mind and graduate in 4 years. So I changed my mind and went into teaching, but I still wasn't convinced until my third year of college when I was doing pre-student teaching. And the first like full lesson that I taught was seventh grade social studies. It was on OPEC,
Oh,
Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries.
sure.
And I just remember getting this like warm, fuzzy feeling. And it was like the skies opened and God shone a light down on me. And I just knew then and there that this was what I was meant to do. And I don't know that many people have experiences like that in any particular career.
Probably not.
And so it was very reassuring since I had been unsure. And since that, I've never looked back since. I haven't had one thing that I'm happy about is I've never had a day where I woke up and was like, you know, I really wish that I had gone into this career instead. I have, upon reflection, though, realized that the bright lights from heavens were actually the overhead projector that I was using to teach my lesson.
Old school.
But at the time, I did not make that connection. But nevertheless, it was a great moment just to know that, yes, this is what I'm meant to do.
Right.
And I felt that way since.
So my next question is going to be on your last day of teaching before you retire.
Yeah.
What's your last lesson going to be? Is it going to be that OPEC lesson or a version of it?
No, I don't think the lesson was probably all that great. The experience was. Let's see, if I were to have to choose, and this would go back to seventh grade social studies, one of the standards, one of the topics that I have had the most fun with is teaching about investment in human capital and capital goods, and how important those are for a country or a state achieving economic growth. And I did one of my favorite lessons was using those old DirecTV commercials where it was like, don't end up in a roadside ditch. And you would have someone who they didn't have DirecTV, and that started this cause and effect relationship where they ended up in a roadside ditch, for example. And so we watched some of those after, you know, learning about human capital and capital goods. And then the students wrote stories or scenarios where it was like, you know, a flow chart basically. First this happens, then this happens. And either it was how, because they invested in human capital or capital goods, in the end, economic growth was achieved, or because a country chose not to invest in one or the other, they ended up in some dismal situation. So students wrote their own, you know, scenarios, and then we kind of did a gallery walk where we read each other's and provided feedback to each other. And one of the best that I'll never forget was a young man wrote a story about how he worked at a factory and his boss refused to invest in capital goods, and he was complaining to his boss that, you know, they could be so much more efficient if they had better equipment. And his boss yelled at him, and it started a series of events where in the end he ended up like married to an ape. And
Of
so it was like,
course.
don't marry an ape, invest in capital
There you
goods.
go. That's
And it was the
wonderful
greatest
advice.
story ever. But he, you know, it was just a great combination of he had all the content, brought in the humor, and it was just really fun.
That's great quality. That's the life lesson right there. He's
Yeah.
right. You don't want to marry an ape.
Yes.
Good for him. Call me.
So
I'll
I
come.
would teach that on my last day,
All
just to
right.
go off, you know, go out with a, you know,
You
fun lesson.
drop the mic for the last time and you walk out
Yes,
the door. And
exactly.
that day you can leave
No
ready the
ape
bell at
marriages.
4 o'clock. You don't have to stick around to 7 that night.
Yes.
Yes. So one of the hopes for this podcast is that young teachers or pre-service teachers listen to it. What kind of advice or idea do you have for a resource that teachers should know about that maybe they don't, that something that helps you become a better teacher and that you could share it with someone else?
Let's see. Well, so one strategy that is commonly used in social studies classes is having students debate topics. And over the years, I have experimented with a variety of activities using debates. And many of them have been total disasters and turn into screaming matches, or where, you've got the class divided into two halves and it's really, one student on side A versus one student on side B, and everyone else is just, watching the show. But being able to engage in, academic discourse and being able to engage in a debate environment is an important skill. So something that I have discovered that has worked well, and it comes from the Stanford History Education Group, which they have all sorts of different resources that are like DBQs, but they're written more at a middle school level, which is
Okay.
really nice. But
Yes.
they have a format called a structured academic controversy, which we refer to them as an SAC, and it's basically a debate. We have renamed them structured academic conversations because controversy with middle schoolers, like,
Can't
it
say
can
that anymore.
take them in a direction that we don't necessarily want to go.
Sure.
But it's formatted like a debate, small groups where you would have like two or three students on each side. So they're more likely to feel comfortable speaking up in a smaller group, but they also have, some partners in case they, need some help. But rather than it being a debate where there's a winning side and there's a losing side, it's all about coming to consensus, and which is
Sounds a
much
good,
more real world
yeah, good life
applicable.
lesson.
So we did one in January using a DBQ where the question was Sherman's March to the Sea justified? And rather than it just being a yes or a no, they come up with, it was 60% justified and here's why, or 40% justified and here's why. And it has some components that really emphasize the students actively listening to the other side in a debate. It can be so much about you anticipating what you're going to say next that you're not even really listening to what the other side is saying, and this forces the students to do so. And again, we've talked about in the real world, if you're arguing immigration with someone, you're not going to get them to be like, oh, you know what? I'm completely wrong. You're completely right. I
Sure.
completely accept your side. It's more like, you know what? I hear you. You've got a strong argument there. I still, however, feel, have some different opinions from that, but it's much more finding some sort of common ground in the middle. And so I have found that it allows us to do a debate activity, which the students really enjoy doing. Certainly, they have to have evidence to be able to do so, but it also is much less aggressive and much more relevant to the real world.
All right. So the fact that they have document-based questions and sort of debate topics for at the middle school level—that's I've never heard of that. Like that. So tell us again the name of the resource, Stanford.
It's called a, well, it comes from Stanford History Education Group, and you have to create an account to
Okay.
access the resources, but it's free. And this particular strategy is a structured academic controversy.
Nice. I'm gonna look that up. That sounds very interesting. I like
It
that.
is.
All right, Stacey, I have one final question for you.
Okay.
When Hollywood gets around to making a movie about Stacey Doctor, teacher extraordinaire,
Yes.
it's going to focus on your superb teaching career you've had over the years. Who's going to play you in the movie?
Let's see. Well, I would, let's see. So I would want someone, I consider myself pretty organized.
Right.
Someone I t at least in teaching, I tend to be pretty type A and lean toward perfectionist. More in that direction. Let's see. I am known for being pretty strong-willed at school. I think someone who I think matches that and has brown hair and brown eyes like me.
Okay.
Natalie Portman.
Oh, I could see her up teaching in front of a classroom. That
Yes.
would
Yeah,
work.
she seems pretty firm, and she's not going to
Yes.
let students push her around.
No.
And
What?
she seems to also be pretty, I think she's like more than an actress. Like she's pretty well educated,
Oh
and
yeah, definitely.
I think she went to an Ivy League school,
I
actually.
think she went to Harvard, didn't she? I think maybe.
Somewhere like that.
Follow-up question to this. You mentioned you're a perfectionist type A type person.
Yes.
Do you find it hard to be a perfectionist in a room filled with middle school kids who are just not being perfect? Like, how do you deal with that?
Good question. Yes and no. I over the years I have had to chill out some. And I there are times where I just have to take a breath and be like, it's okay. But I've also found I think a lot of students appreciate that. They like the organization. They like that things are posted online like they're supposed to be. So there's yes and no. But no, I've been able to make it work. But
Okay.
it's been a learning process, and I've had to let go of control
Yeah,
more
I
than I
asked
would like to,
because
perhaps.
in my classroom when I used to be a teacher, like at first it things would just drive me crazy, but then you have to let it go, otherwise you're gonna go crazy. Like, yeah. Because I always would tell myself there's a lot more of them than me, so I have to sort of meet them where they are. Yeah, great. So, Stacey, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast, and more importantly, thank you for being an amazing teacher. All of us at the Georgia Council, we love your work and we love what you do, and we love when you come to workshops. So, thank you, and we wish you another few years of success until you get to the last day and you can do your last lesson before it's all said and done. All
Thank
right.
you.
And go home early tonight. You've earned it.
I will do my best. It'll be
All
my
right.
goal. All right.
Perfect.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Teach and Tell podcast. Help us spread the word and promote great teachers by giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, I'm Mike Raymer, and I'm here to remind you that econ is life.